You are listening to the Launch Over Podcast on the Without Your Head Network. Hello and welcome to the Launch Over Podcast on the Without Your Head Network. I am Sophia Cassiola.
And I am Michael J. Epstein.
And we have Blanche the dog here. And this is episode 12. This is our first episode of 2021.
It's been a while.
Yeah, don't hold it against us.
Don't hold it against us. At the end of 2012, we had Bob Rose on as our guest in episode 11.
The podcast.
And it was such a bad episode. He made us feel so bad about ourselves. No, that's not, none of that is true. We love Bob, and we'll talk more about projects with him later. But I got a job at the beginning of the year, which I don't want to talk about, but it's good, but it has consumed all of my time. And so that's been tough. As the pandemic winds down, we've started to revive our launch over activities. And so we thought it was a great time to bring back the podcast and start telling you about what has been going on. And we want to introduce our new small companion,
Blanche
the dog.
Yep. You can follow Blanche on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook at Blanche is a dog.
Our previous little companion passed away earlier this year, so that was very sad for us. And Blanche was due to be his little sister, but instead just became a new dog in our lives. And we had made a little short film
with King Ghidorah the dog.
With King Ghidorah the dog called
Bloodhound. I'm taking over.
Yeah, take over.
Which we submitted to, I guess, kind of a competition that was put on by Arrow Video and the movie The Stylist, where they chose some short films to program on the Arrow Video Player, which is a really awesome channel. Tons of great Arrow movies, like especially we've been watching a lot of stuff from the 70s on there, so it's really cool. And so if you go to the Arrow channel, and The Stylist is the movie, I don't even know if I said that. So the people from The Stylist chose Bloodhound as one of the shorts to program with The Stylist on the Arrow channel. And so if you go to the Arrow channel, in the Stylist shortcuts, you will find Bloodhound now. And so that's where it is. If you hear licking, that's Blanche. She's licking my hand.
She likes to be part of the podcast, so she wants to be heard. Even though she doesn't have her own microphone, she wants to be heard.
So anyway, that was a very exciting development for Bloodhound to be included on that Arrow Video Player. And
it was a nice tribute to our little lost friend, King Ghidorah. So we're glad for that. And we've been doing a whole bunch of other stuff. Oh my gosh, 2021, things
yeah, it's
have
already
happened.
Half over. I don't understand how that happened. But we've been doing a bunch of stuff. Some stuff has come out. So for instance, the Women of Rock Oral History Project is kind of an ongoing oral history of women in rock music. It's in the title. It's the name of the project that I work on with Tanya Pearson, who is an archivist and history person.
Historian,
yes. And so she wrote a book about Marianne Faithfull, and it's called Why Marianne Faithfull Matters. It's out on the University of Texas Press, I believe. So if you go, you'll find, if you Google it, it's like all over the Googles now. So that's really cool.
Multiple Googles?
All over the Googles. So I had nothing to do with the book, and that's fine. I'm happy to promote it for Tanya because we work so closely together. But earlier this year, Tanya put together a covers record with a bunch of the people that we have interviewed for the Women of Rock Oral History Project, which is like video and audio. And so she asked me to cover a Marianne Faithfull song with her called Broken English. And it's a really cool song. And so anyway, that is out. It's on Bandcamp if you kind of search for the Women of Rock.
Covers for the Apocalypse.
Covers for the Apocalypse, yep. So anyway, two Marianne Faithfull things out. And that book came out this week. So go get it for the summer reading. And I believe when we had Jason Horton on, we talked about Microbudget Marauders, which is a documentary that he interviewed me
this
for.
Is changing the subject.
I just 188'd right out of there. Yeah. I was done. I was just looking at our list of things to get through.
It's a long list, so we have to hurry.
That came out finally. So I believe it's on Amazon still. I'm not actually sure.
It's on a bunch of channels, but it's called Microbudget Marauders 2.
I'm in the second one.
Yes.
Yep.
It's on Tubi, I believe.
It was on Tubi, yeah. So it should be there.
It's free
still.
On Tubi. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to spoiler anything here, but Microbudget Marauders 3.
It's going to be very lame.
It's going to be very lame. It features some lame filmmakers that nobody cares about at all. I'm talking about myself, so yes. I can say that. No, I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know who the other filmmakers are. They may be also.
They might make up
for you. They may be uncool like me. or they may be awesome. Given that Jason Horton puts together some great stuff, I'm sure that they are awesome filmmakers. I'm sure the film is really interesting. And we had him as a guest a few podcasts back. He's been doing quite a lot with his YouTube channel, talking about the filmmaking experience and especially the sort of business side and trying to figure out how to make money in the ever-changing landscape of streaming services. Yeah. And
Amazon has changed a ton in just the last few months. So if you are an indie filmmaker, it's a good place to catch up on what all the new... I mean, basically, Amazon is dead to indies at this point.
It's dead to me.
The too long didn't read of it. But anyway, his channel is a really great place to kind of get a handle on what's going on in the indie world.
Yeah, we also this year put out a film that was something that we had shot pre-pandemic, and we were kind of sitting on trying to figure out when to finish it, whether to send it to Fest. We just kind of got around to just saying, well, let's just put it on the web. It's a fun little thing. It's called The Big Steep, and it is a short film about a fellow played by David Whitney who comes from England to visit Hollywood and finds that he does not have a tea kettle.
I'm pretty sure this was just
Airbnb. It's a true story.
He just told us the story. Yeah. And he's like, we need to make a film about this.
He actually was
true to life.
Yeah, he was visiting from England for partly for a film festival
and
partly for a horror house and partly for some meetings and other things. And we were like, hey, let's make a movie. So we just got together one day and within 6 hours or something like that, maybe we made this movie called The Big Steep. It is a tea kettle genie. It's on YouTube, The Big Steep. I would say check it out if you like tea.
British people and tea, and you're not a Trump fan.
Oh yeah, there's
and
a little
you
bit
wanna
of,
see here's some jazz and some see jazz. Some pre-pandemic Hollywood. Maybe it's a movie for you. It's like
Steep.
7 minutes long.
Yeah. It's goofy. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing we did, or you did, really. I didn't do anything. I barely did anything.
So Bring Us Your Women is an ongoing project that we do with Catherine Capozzi, who is our favorite person to have do our movie scores, and only.
And so she was a guest. Favorite. She was a guest on the podcast a few episodes ago as well. So if you want to hear us talk to her, you can go back in time to last year.
Yes. So Bring Us Your Women is kind of a multimedia project. It's worldwide. It's Catherine just gets all these fabulous musicians together to kind of tell the untold stories of like historical icons and historical figures that are women and often are kind of misrepresented, I think, throughout history. So, you know, I've done songs on Mary Magdalene. I've done songs on sirens for this project. So most recently, she asked me to do a song on Medusa. And it finally came out. I wrote it a couple years ago now, but it just came out. And I really think it's like one of the best songs I've ever written.
Wow. That doesn't mean it's good. It just means it's
no,
the best
it just
song
means like
written.
It's like in the top five probably of songs I've ever written. And like I didn't write the music. So Catherine, I should specify that. Catherine sent me the track and I wrote the lyrics and the vocal. I did the vocals. And so anyway. It's a team effort, of course, and with Catherine's band Axe Monkey too. But anyway, I love the lyrics, and I think it, because her story is really messed up if you go and read about how she was abused by everybody around her. So it's not like, you know, the little kid version that we hear is like, oh, you know, she had snakes and she turned people into stone. It's like much worse than you
it's
could
a very
ever imagine.
Story.
Yeah. So anyway, I really love doing that. And we did a little video in our second bedroom with like a lot of flashing lights and stuff. So if you're not photo sensitive, you can hop on YouTube and watch the music video for Medusa by Bring Us Your Women.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about this other musical endeavor?
Yeah. A friend of mine from back in Boston named Jeffrey Vachon, we have a saying together because our bands used to play together and we'd always try to figure out a little bit extra thing. And so we have a thing called let's put some effort into this thing. That's just like a thing
slogan.
We say.
That's
it's a
motto.
Slogan. It's
a motto
of life. Let's put some effort into this thing. So he came up with the idea for a project about kind of focusing on like drug abuse and mental illness and a way to like raise awareness and money that he wants to do once a year on April 5th, which is happens to be the day that we lost Lane Stanley and Staley.
Staley
of Alice in Chains and Kurt Cobain from Nirvana. So it's called the April 5th Project. And he got a whole bunch of people to do covers of songs from people that we kind of lost too soon. And so I did a cover of In Excess of Don't Change. It's a really cool song. What I liked about the song was, for being probably written by like a 20-year-old, it is really just about like accepting people and not changing them, and like loving them for who they are and not change. Like, I don't know. It's in the title.
That's the title, Don't Change.
It's all in the title today. But I thought that was like, it kind of like, for something, you know, the lyrics are not that deep, but like I thought it was kind of a nice sentiment. So it was really fun to do that video. And I set up like a little camera on my makeup stand and I did a lip sync video with it. And so you can also find that on YouTube if you search. So I did that under my old band name, Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling. Check out the April 5th Project, In Excess Don't Change, Jeffrey Vachon, and the April 5th Project.
And I think we talked a little bit last year at the end when we had Bob on in that show that ruined the entire podcast where Bob shut us down.
We were depressed for 6 months.
No, yeah. Just kidding. We were working on a film called The Transformations of the Doctors Jenkins. And that was a pandemic project involving about 25 filmmakers. And we don't have a whole lot to say about it yet, but it seems like we're going to have a festival premiere very soon. So stay tuned to future episodes. But it's a project that involved getting contributions from multiple filmmakers that they did on their own. And it kind of came together as a full project with some wraparound stuff that we kind of wrote and shot together. There's a story about how the wraparound, it's kind of a meta discussion about these types of projects. I guess one might call it sort of like an exquisite corpse project where people are doing things in isolation that kind of fit together, but ours is a little bit of a twist on that, I would say. So anyway, transformations of the Dr. Jenkins on the way. We've also been getting into production finally.
Yeah.
That's the maybe the most exciting news that's been going on. We completed our first production. We were actually on set shooting a movie for the first time since March 2020, really, other than things that we've done at home. On our own. And so that was a film that we worked on with Aaron Brokus, who is also a guest on our podcast last year. And it's a film called Sitting Duck. And that should be... We already saw a rough cut. We shot it. When did we shoot it? A week ago.
Yeah.
And we've already seen a rough cut. It's coming along. We're trying to get it out to festivals very soon. It stars Michael King, who's a talented comedic actor, and Tuesday Knight, who many of us know from the playing a character in Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4.
Yep. So it was a last weekend, 2-day shoot, really jam-packed, but it was fun to be back on set. Yeah,
so that's coming soon. And we're about to endeavor into an adventure to work on a film called Demon for Hire. We're just telling you about all the things that are kind of in production because we're excited to be back in the game a little bit. And Sophia is, I didn't mention, but Sophia was the cinematographer on Sitting Duck, and is also the cinematographer on Demon for Hire, which is a film by Travis Hirman. And we're going to be traveling across state lines.
Uh-oh.
It's probably breaking some kind of law.
Is that legal? Yeah.
I don't know. Is cinematography across state lines?
I'm a little bit worried about bringing all my batteries on the plane. And
they may get mad. Yeah, we have a lot of lithium batteries. There's a limit.
Yeah, so we're going to Denver to shoot Demon for Hire in just a couple weeks, really. So that should be... It's about a little blue puppet private investigator.
Who's a demon.
Who's also a demon.
And he's for hire.
And he's for hire, and he investigates.
Yes. It's a horror comedy also.
Yeah.
So as Sitting Duck
is also a horror comedy.
Yeah, so you know, we're excited to be working on some fun projects, and we've been having meetings over Zoom forever about this, and we're glad to have it start happening. The big project we've got coming up, dun, dun, dun. We've been part of a team of filmmakers invited by Stephen Stahl, also a guest on our previous
podcast.
A lot of our previous guests were, we already knew we were going to be involved with them.
Well, we bring our collaborators on. Yeah, that's the whole point.
This episode, we have no guests because we just figured we have so many.
This is just a recap.
We're just trying to get caught up, get back into the swing of things. So we're the guests this time. Maybe Blanche is a guest.
Blanche was licking me and then just fell asleep in her bed.
She got bored.
Yeah.
She's like, this is boring. I don't want to hear about what you've got launch over in production. I'm just going to go back
to sleep. We tried Blanche out as a set dog last weekend on Sitting Duck, and she's very friendly with people and loves to be held and stuff, but I think it was a little too crazy for her, which was
too overwhelming.
Felt bad. It was too overwhelming. Yeah.
But everybody loved her, I think.
Anybody wants to apply to be Blanche's friend during production? It's a job opening.
It's available.
Yeah. I mean, she did have a lot, you know, people just kind of took turns taking care of Blanche. But, you know, a dedicated
She makes friends quickly.
She's 4 pounds. Very cute.
Yes. So anyway, Stephen Stahl, previous guest on our podcast, runs a festival called Sick and Wrong, and that is in Orlando, Florida. And we are big fans of that festival because it really focuses on kind of outsider filmmaking, but also doing it in a way that's not that's trying to celebrate diverse voices and perspectives, and kind of making sure to let's say punch upward or to push things in a way that's positive, even in the context of some complex material, some unpleasant material, and so on. So anyway, Stephen is doing something really cool, which is he got together a group of filmmakers whose work he enjoyed from previous seasons of Sick and Wrong, previous years of Sick and Wrong, and got them together and decided to make an anthology film all featuring the same little creature. It's a kind of a worm creature, a parasitic worm
it's
creature.
It's like a foot long. It's fleshy colored.
It is.
And it's got hair
and
teeth.
Of those people whose work he enjoyed, he also decided to invite us for some reason. I don't know, it was a mistake. I think we got added to the email by accident or something. But no, we were invited to be part of this anthology. And so he sent us a worm. He hired an artist who lives in, I believe, Germany, to make these worms, to actually fabricate them, and sent everybody who's involved in making the film a worm. And so we're all kind of now meeting together and discussing what stories we're going to tell using that and working on ways to integrate those stories to make a feature film that will, you know, have our individual stories and voices, but also have some kind of cohesion to it as well.
Right. And so he is crowdfunding this movie, this anthology, on Kickstarter because, you know, it's very expensive to make films, and he wants to give all the filmmakers a little bit of their budget through this Kickstarter. So that is still running for just a couple more days. If you go on Kickstarter and just search for Fat Fleshy Fingers, nothing spelled weird, all spelled normal English
with
ways
Fs.
With Fs.
No PHs.
It's not a 90s. Crappy band.
It's a featured project on Kickstarter. It's a project love. Which I was not to say I was surprised because I think it's an excellent project, but you know, Kickstarter I expect is a little more mainstream. And this is a little bit, you know, more of an outsider thing, but I think they recognize the enthusiasm and you know, the opportunity for this kind of collaboration to be built, and they thought it was a really cool project. And as part of that project, there are a lot of backer rewards. We try to contribute as many crazy backer
rewards
as possible.
There, yeah.
We just keep being like, Stephen, you can add this thing of us. But right now, you can actually get a copy of our previous film, Clickbait, on Blu-ray, a limited edition Blu-ray that we have signed. And that is not, I think it's really out of print. I mean, sometimes it was put out through Horror Pack, and they do have some copies for sale, I know. But this is actually, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but this is actually even, it costs less in the Kickstarter campaign, and it's signed by us, and you're supporting the campaign.
I'm seeing if it's still available.
It's still available. Yeah, we just added a few more today because it's sold out, actually, so we added a few more copies. You can also pay, I believe, $25. A $25 contribution allows you to create a 25-word phrase or statement or, you know, set of sentences.
Tirade is how
tirade.
It's said
that's what it's looking for.
Kickstarter.
That Sophia will yell at me.
On film. We'll send you a video.
So if you ever wanted to yell at me but felt bad about doing it,
I
just
don't
hire
feel bad.
Sophia to do it for
$25. There are like some stipulations that if it's grossly offensive.
Not racist in some or something.
Yeah. Horrible, horrible way. I won't say it. But I'm sure you're all cool and wouldn't do that.
No, nobody listening to this.
Pretty much, I'll pretty much do anything you send in as long as it's not like.
Not racist.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so there's that. There's actually
Polaroids
opportunities.
Polaroids of Blanche.
Polaroids for, yep.
So Blanche with the worm. Polaroid. Creepy. And there was also another on-set Polaroids, which doesn't really say, but it's going to be from our set. That's also on there. I'm really into Polaroids. It's just one of my hobbies.
Yeah.
So I always offer that as a, yeah.
Also, one of the coolest featured backer rewards on there is that you can sponsor segments of the film. And I think it's a kind of first come, first serve as to which segment you actually get to sponsor. But what the sponsorship includes is a credit that says you're the sponsor in the credits, but also a drawing of you in the credits that kind of shows your face done by one of the artists who's doing the kind of interstitial, I would say. I don't know if they've been announced. I don't know who's announced yet or what. But anyway, a really talented artist who we also collaborated with on the transformations of the Dr. Jenkins. And she's also going to be drawing all of the people who contribute for that segment sponsorship. And so your picture would be in the credits, which I think is a really cool way of celebrating those people.
Yes. Segment sponsor.
And you can also get the worm.
Yeah. That's one of the big, you won the lottery or you went to Vegas and you got a little extra cash. You can just get a screen used worm.
Yep.
So.
Could be our worm.
Yeah.
If you tell Steven that you want our worm, we could probably make that happen.
Yeah. One person has already chosen that. So
they may have chosen our worm. Who knows?
I don't know if they were what worm they were offered, but there's only I think there's less than
about 10 worms.
10 worms in existence. So that's a pretty cool reward. So there's a lot of crazy stuff on here is what we're getting at.
So Fat Fleshy Fingers, yeah. Named after some lyrics from the Neutral Milk Hotel song, Oh Comely. We found out that Steven is a fan of Neutral Milk Hotel, and then I told him the many boring tales of my life in a Neutral Milk Hotel ukulele cover band called Neutral Uke Hotel. So I've been a big fan of Neutral Milk Hotel for a long time. One of the backer awards, which I guess we have to do because somebody is back
there,
is that everybody involved in the film is going to lip sync
karaoke
songs from Neutral Milk Hotel's seminal In the Airplane Over the Sea album. So I don't know what that's about. We may end up having to record ourselves playing some of those songs at some point. I think that only goes out to the backers who choose it, though.
Yeah.
It's a very private concert.
A bunch more should contribute to that because I think right now it's just like one. It's a lot of work for one person.
Yes, yeah. But it'll be fun.
Yeah,
I
whatever.
I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what we've been doing. We're waiting a little bit more to return. We're looking at the opportunity to arise to return to filming the feature film that we had left off on back in February of 2020 called The Once and Future Smash. And that is a mockumentary about two fellows who had played the character Smash Mouth in the 1970 movie End Zone 2. And those two characters are played by Michael St. Michaels from The Greasy Strangler and our good friend Bill Whedon, maybe most famous for Sergeant Kabuki Man, but he's also been in a bunch of other cool stuff as well. So we're excited to get that movie finished and let you all see it because they both did fantastic work in the film. We've really shot everything with them. Now we just need to shoot some other material for the film.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at with our creative endeavors, and we're just diving right back in. We had no idea that vaccination uptake would be so fast and that the world would start returning and, we'd be allowed to get back into production really safely so soon.
Yeah.
That's a surprise to us.
It is. We have not, I'm going to pivot.
Okay, do it.
We haven't been back to the movie theater yet.
No.
So we've been watching movies at home. Not as many as you would think. Like, we kind of slowed down a little bit.
We did?
Yeah, on our movie watching, because we've just been watching Murder, She Wrote.
We have been watching a lot of Murder, She Wrote.
Just, you know, every night before bed, it's like just a nice warm hug from Angela Lansbury.
Some of the episodes are kind of like giallo films. Yeah, and some they're pretty interesting sometimes.
For a minute there, all the episodes had like gloved killers, and it was interesting. But they go up and down in quality, like one episode to the next. It's like not even like a particular season is great. It's just like there's a handful of great ones per season. So that's what we've been up to every night.
And if you like really bad Maine accents, if you're like, I loved the terrible Maine accents in Pet Sematary, I want to hear some more of those kind of terrible Maine
it's
accents.
It's like a weird Southern accent crossed with something else. I don't even know what it's just
a Maine accent.
Well, everybody does it a little differently on the show from each
other. Yeah, I think they don't really know.
I have no idea.
It's a little, I mean, everybody kind of, I don't know, at least in the horror world, we kind of think of Fred Gwynne in Pet Sematary as like the quintessential,
dead is better. You can't pronounce your T's, right. Michael. Sorry. Come on.
Sometimes dead is better. Anyway, I'm not very good at the
horrible, but that's that whole show.
Bad Maine accent, but the bad Maine accent is a prominent part of it. Luckily, Angela Lansbury is just like I'm British. I don't do the bad Maine accent.
Yeah, she like I feel like her British accent doesn't come through a ton. Like it's not like she doesn't sound particularly British on the show, but she also doesn't really sound like the Maine or totally American either. It's just kind of her own thing.
She doesn't say dead is better.
No, they leave it to like the doc. We're on season 5 now, and they got rid of the original police officer who
Tom Bosley.
Yeah, who did it the like most hilariously, but the doctor also.
The doctor is a very
does it hilariously. Yeah. So anyway, that's like every night in our compound is watching Murder, She Wrote to go to sleep.
And we review. We're going to start writing reviews of how good the Maine accents are in each episode.
I really wish like. Somebody needs to do a documentary about how she is obviously the killer. Because, like, who shows up and every time somebody gets murdered?
A lot.
No matter where she goes, like, well, Cabot, it's a little weird.
Cabot Cove, Maine, which is where
must
she
must have
where
the
she
highest is per capita murder in the world.
It definitely is the highest per capita murder.
But there's also, like, she travels a lot and there's always a murder. Like, I think that's, and, like, sometimes they bring it up that's, like, a little suspicious, you know, and sometimes they suspect her, but she always gets away because it's obviously always her.
Once in a while they arrest her even.
Yeah, that's always fun. So anyway.
Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote. It's a thing.
Not as good as Columbo, which we watched previously.
Columbo is a treasure, yes.
Columbo didn't kill anybody.
No. So we've been watching some other stuff too. Do you want to get into some of that?
Sure, I guess, yeah. Do I have a choice?
Well, I don't know.
No, let's do it.
Sure. Well, you know what we never talked about was Possessor.
Wow.
Which is like way back.
Way back.
I did want to bring it up because for like a few months, it was like the only movie I'd watched that I liked. Like around like whenever, the new year when we watched it. But it is the Cronenberg Jr., I forget his name, Brandon Cronenberg, yeah. Who I really liked his first movie, which Michael still hasn't
seen it,
called Antiviral. I thought that was a really interesting commentary on like celebrity culture and obsession. I think that's a really cool indie movie, Antiviral. And Possessor, it was really great. I loved it a lot. Very creepy, and it's hard to creep me out these days. But really cool ideas about identity and corporations and assassins, like weird rubber masks. Like it's...
You've really got all the themes there.
It's a very fascinating movie, and the cinematography is really interesting.
It was probably my favorite feature film of 2020.
I would say, for me too. I was really surprised
how much I liked it. And, I mean, obviously, you know, Brandon Cronenberg is never going to escape being like, oh, it's David Cronenberg's son, but he pretty clearly has a voice of his own.
Yeah.
And he's not, it's not like he's just trying to make like David Cronenberg movies, but there's definitely a personality to it that is sort of compatible, sort of in the same realm.
Yeah, it's in the same realm.
But his work is very original, and I think he's an excellent filmmaker, and I can't
wait
to see
more. And if you
like
Mandy, it's the woman who played Mandy as the lead.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I forget her name, but she was very good in Possessor. Like, I feel like Mandy, the character of Mandy is like an idea more than anything in that film, so in this movie she actually got to act.
Andrea Riseborough.
Yeah, she's a Canadian actress, I think.
Canadian.
And it's Jennifer Jason Leigh is like
Lee,
her boss in it. I don't know. It's a cool cast. I don't know. I liked it a lot. Thought it was interesting. And, you know, we like thematic movies. We like movies about stuff. And that is a movie that leaves you thinking about a lot of different things. It really sticks with you. So that's my favorite kind of movie.
Wow.
Yeah. You know what? Also, I don't know if we mentioned it back when we were watching like festival movies, but a movie we also really liked from last year was called Dinner in America. And that actually just came out on the Arrow player. So when you're checking out The Stylist and Bloodhound, I highly, highly recommend Dinner in America, which also has Pat Healy, our actor for Half-Cocked that we
the movie that we did with Aaron Brokus, yeah.
So, you know, a little link there, tiny link, but really, really funny, cute movie. Just a slice of life out there. But it surprised me in a lot of ways, especially for like such like a, I don't know, like because people keep comparing it to like Napoleon Dynamite and like Garden State and like a lot of movies I don't like.
No, it's not really like any of this.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, I guess it's kind of that like vibe, but
it reminds me of The Greasy Strangler in a way. Like, it's nothing like The Greasy Strangler, but it reminds me of the kind of quirky characters.
It's quirky.
In that.
Yeah, quirky, I guess, is the word. Yeah.
But it's also like, it's heartfelt. It's not, yeah. I mean, not The Greasy Strangler.
Like the first 40 minutes, I was like, I think I like this, but they're going to piss me off soon. And then they just leaned into like a wholesome kind of vibe towards the end and middle. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, I wouldn't have expected you to go wholesome and you did. And it like was really nice, I thought.
Yeah. Should we talk about some of the other? I mean, I think, you know, we're late into 2021 at this point, but I can tell you some of the films that I loved, my favorite films from 2020, because we never did a wrap up. And a lot of them are films that we saw at festivals. So they may not even be out yet.
Yeah, well, I brought that one up because it literally just came out this week.
Right, right. I loved Leap of Faith is available on Shudder now, and we love that. It was a documentary, an interview with William Friedkin.
It is so basic to say The Exorcist is one of your favorite horror movies, and when people say it, it's like kind of an eye roll, but it literally is one of my favorite horror movies. And it's just, and Friedkin, who we saw at the Egyptian one time doing a talk, not a talk, but like just kind of ranting.
Q&A, but
about, it was about to live and die in LA, right? Yep. Which is also a great film. But anyway, so it's just Friedkin talking for like an hour and a half about The Exorcist, and it's just so delightful. Kind of very unfiltered feeling, and he's
a character.
The stuff
anyway.
He remembers about making these films, I don't even remember about the shoot we did last week, and it's just so good.
And you learn a lot about his collaboration with Blatty, who wrote the book, and how they kind of worked together, because Blatty, I think, wrote the original screenplay, and then Friedkin was like, we're cutting all that stuff. You know, he had kind of a contentious relationship.
It didn't open up in the Middle East, or is the opening in the Middle East? Is it like Iraq or something?
Yeah.
It, like, he didn't even have that in the screenplay, and he's like, you're crazy. You got to put that back in. And he's like, we're going to go fly over there and get it. Like, you need it for the story.
It was fascinating. It was an interesting collaboration. And then there was an interesting story about Bernard Herrmann, who was originally supposed to do the music for the movie. And I think Friedkin, who is a little bit cantankerous and maybe difficult, kind of pissed him off somehow. And so they ended up using all
Friedkin just went to the music store and bought a bunch of classical records and discovered the famous Exorcist music, which had come out that year.
Yeah, it was brand new. The
bells.
Tubular bells.
Yeah, tubular bells. So just crazy. He literally, like, according to him, threw in a bunch of temp music he got at the classical music store.
So basically he did all like needle drops for it, which is really interesting for a movie that where the music is so iconic.
Yeah.
Right? Because especially Tubular Bells. And if you've ever heard, if you haven't heard Tubular Bells, maybe go listen to it, because it's like one small section that is used in The Exorcist kind of over and over. And the rest of it's really nothing. You wouldn't expect what the rest of it is based on what you might
based
be familiar with.
Creepy little.
It's not really like that. Yeah.
My favorite tidbit, since we're just ranting about this movie now, is at one point he's like, there's no visual metaphor in The Exorcist, except every time you see a staircase, someone is ascending it. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know. I just love stuff like that.
And then
that.
He talks about how everything is a visual metaphor.
It's really, really funny. But then once I was like, oh my God, it's so true. Like, you know, he shows like the subway and like in the house, and you know, it's actually very interesting once you realize that.
So anyway, that was a great movie, definitely worth checking out. I was a big fan of The Lodge, which came out a long time ago. I don't know, maybe that's kind of mainstream.
It is kind of more mainstream, but we liked it.
Yeah, no, it was a very cool movie, and I was not really a big fan of their previous movie, Goodnight Mommy, which I know a lot of people loved. And so I was like going into The Lodge. I was like, I don't know, I'm not really sure. But anyway, I found it to be a really cool, symbolic, creepy movie. So, but that's kind of been talked about a lot. So some of the ones that were not so talked about, we saw a South Korean movie called Me and Me, And I don't know if it's out yet. I'm not even sure what.
Yeah, I think
what,
we did talk about on. This one before.
We did.
Too.
Okay, yeah, it's, yeah. But this is one of my favorites from last year. It's like very hard to describe. It's you know, another identity movie where somebody's in this town and people have died and they're all maybe the same people and there's layers of kind of complexity to it. But I thought that was a really cool movie. I was a big fan. Any others that you wanted to talk about from last year?
I don't remember last year.
Okay, well, you know, I'll run through the rest of mine real quick. We talked about Repossession a bit. That was, I thought, a really cool movie from Singapore. And it's about a guy whose life is kind of falling apart because he's, you know, he's been so dependent on a materialistic lifestyle that when things start not working out in the material world, he kind of has trouble coping and kind of disconnects, and there's manifestations as ghosts and other things. Another sort of richly, I guess, complex, you know, metaphorical movie. So I thought that was really cool. We really like this movie. I think it's from Spain. Is it from Spain? Called House, H0US3.
Did that come out? I think it did.
I think it's out now, yeah. Actually.
It was a really good example of writing to a single space, I would say. And it's kind of a dinner party where things are revealed.
Yeah, it's a sci-fi movie where you're never really sure. I mean, eventually you're sure, but the ending is a little interesting
too, because it gets into like current technologies and Bitcoin and stuff like that too a little bit.
Yeah, it's a cool movie. If you want like a low budget sci-fi, if you're into those kind of like The Primer and those kind of movies, I think House is a really, really good one. We really like Patrick. Last year?
I definitely talked about this, but I did love Patrick. It's the guy who's like the boyfriend in the movie Revenge, if you saw that, but like definitely a little schlubbier in this movie. But really weird, very quirky movie about grief and a hammer. So yeah,
it's a nudist colony.
Trailer park. yeah, not even a trailer park, a camp.
Yeah. Anyway, interesting, weird movie. I really like The Oak Room. I think you liked it less than I did.
I did not enjoy it, yeah. So you can talk about it.
Well, I mean, it's a mystery, Canadian mystery. Again, set in only a few settings. A guy kind of returns to town, and there's layers of storytelling in it where they keep recalling other stories within stories. And I found it, I'm not sure I quite figured out what happened in it at the end. You know, there's like still some stuff that I never really quite pieced together. But I found the structure interesting, and I thought the performances were interesting. And it's a, you know, another little like low budget movie that I think did a lot with relatively few resources. So I thought that was cool. And then the last one that I think we did talk about at some point was a movie called Sleep. And I'm not sure if it's quite out yet. It's a German movie.
Yeah. About like kind of how like Nazis just, because, you know, like when you think about it, it's not that far along ago, that makes sense. It's not that long ago generationally. And so it just still is kind of hanging over even young people in Germany. Yeah. And so I feel like that's kind of like the deeper layer of it, but it's also kind of like a ghost story in like a hotel. I thought it was really cool.
The cloud of history kind of hangs over. It's very, I mean, I hate to call things Lynchian just because they're strange.
Don't let the Nazi part scare you away.
It's really nothing to do with Nazis.
Yeah, it's very little in there, but like it's kind of the way, you know, like the KKK kind of hangs on. It felt like that kind of vibe.
It reminds me, the reason I say Lynchian is because to me, Twin Peaks is really a story about how you can't escape your fate and your history. And, you know, the sort of Laura Palmer, and I mean, spoiler for Twin Peaks, I guess, but there's this sort of family history of being kind of cursed, I guess, almost, or being damned. And I feel like there's something in that movie Sleep that's also about this sort of like layering of family history and you know, escaping from the guilt of the past. So I thought that was cool. Not sure if it's out yet.
Yeah.
Probably should have looked this up first, but.
Oh my God.
You know, all these things will be out soon.
I do want to plug two movies I recently watched for other people's podcasts.
You did?
Yeah. So I recently rewatched Predator and Predator 2 and Predators.
That's three movies.
But not Predator 3.
There's no Predator 3.
Did we not?
3.
What is Predator 3? That's nothing.
There's The Predator, which we didn't watch.
Which is the recent one.
Yeah, Predators. Predators is
Adrian Brody.
Kind of Predator 3. It was okay. Alien versus Predator in between.
I did see that one a long time ago. I didn't really watch that one. The point of the podcast was just for Predator 1987.
The first one.
The first one. So Tony McMillan, he's an artist and writer, and he has a podcast called Too Young for This Shit, where he and his co-host talk, Peter Leone is the co-host. Leon, I don't know. They talk to people about movies, like especially action movies, I guess, that they saw when they were kids, like back in the 80s and early 90s. So Predator was definitely a movie that I saw as a child. And so it was really fun just to kind of get into it and talk about like why it still holds up and how it still holds up. And what a career, like going from Predator to Die Hard is pretty cool. So anyway, Too Young for This Shit. Sorry about the swear.
That's okay.
I think, you know, it's somewhere where podcasts are if you search for Tony McMillan. So anyway, it was cool to be on that. And then Steven Stahl, who we spoke of before, the kind of producer, I guess is the word, of Fat Fleshy Fingers and the Sick and Wrong Film Festival, he had me on his podcast. Part one is out now, where his podcast is called The Hold Up. And Michael was also on it recently, so you can talk about that next.
I can?
Yes, I will allow it.
Thank you.
So for The Hold Up, he does his whole thing is, and he told me I described it wrong. So
it's a movie that you liked in the past.
No, I said it was a movie that you vaguely remember.
Yeah, well, he's saying
liking.
A movie that you actually liked and you haven't seen in at least 10 years. So it's a movie that you did, you were a fan of, but had not seen in at least 10 years, and then you're watching it again.
But
to
I think
see
part of it too is like that you don't necessarily remember everything about the movie.
Right.
You just remember that you liked it. So we revisited Pi, the debut film from Darren Aronofsky. So you can hear my thoughts
on
the podcast.
I'm glad you spelled that because I think it would have been confusing.
Yeah, Pi. It's like the number. We had a lot of, I think it's still an interesting movie. I mean, you can go listen to the podcast. I talk about it a lot, but we had a lot of complaints about the math and the set design and stuff.
I had a pretty big complaint.
They're very sloppy with it.
In the opening credits, the number. So
this is like one of the sloppy things.
At one point in my life, I had memorized pi, the first 100 digits of pi. I no longer know the first 100, but I know probably 20 or something. I'm not going to spout them off, but in the opening credits, they show pi, and at the like ninth digit, it's wrong.
And then as it goes, there's just slashes and other things that aren't even numbers
there. Why put a wrong number at the ninth digit? They didn't have past that, or they looked it on the calculator or something?
My only thing for them is it was 98, and maybe they had to hand type it, and they just got bored.
I will say that when I memorized the digits of pi in like 97. So it was available. The information was available.
They could have hired you.
You could have hired me.
Type it up for them.
I mean, the internet existed
at
this point. It's like,
it was janky though.
It's not like you had to even go to the library. You know, you could just, maybe they looked it up and it was like a site that had the wrong.
You had to ask Jeeves. It was like a whole process. My other big complaint is like, there's a number that's really important. That's 218 digits, I think. I think it was 218. And I, of course, after this, with the pi being wrong, I paused the screen and sat there and counted it, and they were one digit short.
Two digits short.
Or two digits.
216.
Yeah, it was 216. And it was stupid because it was like 50 digits, 50 digits, 50 digits, 50 digits, and then the last was just like 16. And I was like, that should have been the easy one to count, and you're off by two.
Maybe they're just messing with you.
Yeah, you know what? They could be messing with nerds because usually I'm not the person that's going to be like, what is the numerology of this movie? So anyway, a lot of problems with pi, but also it still kind of holds up. I guess I spoil alerted.
You gotta
wait for the second episode. So if you want to hear me talk about this at length and other random stuff that comes into my head, The Hold Up with Steven Stahl, the first half. So basically it comes in two parts. The first part is you haven't rewatched it yet. So you just talk about what you remember and like why you ever watched it and like the time in your life that you saw it. And then we split up and watch the film in our respective houses, and then we come back to the podcast after.
I don't think you're required to watch it in your house. You can watch it anywhere you like.
Okay, fine. I watched it on my couch with my dog. And then the second part is like discussing, does it hold up? Dun, 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 the name of the podcast.
Yes. I was also on this podcast, not the pi episode, but I was in an episode for the movie Conan the Destroyer. And because I like to make Steven suffer as much as possible, I said, you know what, Steven, I'm going to watch Conan the Barbarian, Conan the Destroyer, Red Sonja, and Call the Conqueror. And he only watched Conan the Barbarian and Conan the Destroyer. To me, it was an interesting discussion about the differences, especially between Conan the Barbarian and Conan the Destroyer, in the sense of what the thematic elements were and what, because Conan the Barbarian is like a very serious, like, art film in a way. It's really about, like, it's like a religious allegory. It's a very strange film, very different than what I would have expected. Conan the Destroyer is like a straight comic book cartoon, like, you know, just exactly what it is on the surface. I did enjoy both, spoiler, but listen to the podcast. We talk quite a lot about what appeals to us about Conan movies and so on. And I even throw in some Red Sonja and unfortunately talk about Kevin Sorbo's terrible performance in Call the Conqueror, but, you know, it's all right.
Yeah. We watched a couple of things this week that I thought were really cool and interesting. One was The Vampire Doll, which was on Arrow. I don't know, I actually know much about this movie, but it's 1970 and it's a Japanese movie?
Japanese movie.
Japanese movie that's very much in like the Jean Roland vampire. People say Hammer horror, but I think it's more Jean Roland even than Hammer horror, but the bit of gothic Hammer horror vibes to it. So kind of a rare thing for Japanese cinema, but very weird and pretty cool little movie called The Vampire Doll. And Michael informed me that there are two more by this director that are vampire movies.
Yeah, so he was definitely influenced by European, films.
I
think very much Hammer, but he did, because the Roland movies mostly did not exist at this point. I mean, the Roland movies are mid-70s or 71, 72. This movie came out in 1970. It definitely kind of marries more of like an arts spiritual aesthetic with the Hammer kind of gothic films. Michio Yamamoto is the director, and he had made it was a trilogy of films. One is called Lake of Dracula and one is called Evil of Dracula. And when I say a trilogy, I don't think they're actually narratively related, but just three kind of like gothic horror vampire films. And I'd been meaning to see them forever. And so we were browsing once when Bloodhound was added to Arrow. We were like, oh, this is an excuse to finally, you know, get the service and actually watch some of these movies. And so I was very excited because they put out a box set and I hadn't gotten around to actually getting it. But now we're kind of digging into those. So that's really cool.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to watching the other two. We also watched, so I'm always so pleased because we have watched dozens of Gialli movies at this point. I would say definitely in the many dozens.
Many dozens, yes.
But like what surprises me and delights me is like there's always more Gialli.
Well, many of these.
How is it possible?
Because there are lots of them made, but many of these boutique labels, like Arrow, for example,
they're restoring and
putting out films. And it's really cool because I think a lot of these films, it's surprising probably to everybody involved that they're having a resurgence because these are films that probably nobody expected. I mean, they probably didn't go seen for, you know, maybe they were seen when they came out. And then there was a long gap where these movies were not available and probably nobody really saw them. And now there's this resurgence where everybody's kind of doing restorations and these beautiful, you know, 4K scans of all these movies and everything and really nice packaging. And they're interesting movies. I mean, the style is so wonderful. I mean, the movie that you want to talk about was called The Case of the Scorpion's Tail.
Yeah, by Sergio Martino, who has done a bunch of these that we do like and had seen like Torso and All the Colors of the Dark and Your Vice is a... I have to read this one because it's so long. There's sentences. Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have a Key. So we've seen a lot of his movies, but we had not seen The Case of the Scorpion's Tail. And it's a fun one, I thought. You know, it's not like a 5-star, but maybe it's like a 4 as far as the giallos go. Like, it's not like in my favorites, but I did enjoy it quite a bit.
It's very early. Again, it's 71, yeah. So it's pre-Argento and some of the others. And so, I mean, Martino is actually one of my favorite filmmakers of that group. I not only like his gialli, but I actually really like, he made a movie called Hands of Steel that I really like. He made a movie called Screamers that I really like. It's called Island of the Fishmen or Screamers. There's a few titles of it, but that's a really fun movie. So he did a lot of different kind of genre stuff around that time. And he has a very distinct kind of style of storytelling and a way of structuring the edit of the film and the way it's shot. I don't know who the cinematographer of Scorpion's Tale was, but they're really, I think they're very unique, even within the family of all this stuff. They yeah. have some of the characteristics that are common amongst, you know, many of the gialli, but he has a very unique style. And I think All the Colors of the Dark is maybe the most famous for being like really, really stylized, you know, with the way it's shot, and there's a lot of like strange camera tricks and other effects and things. So anyway, Sergio Martino, definitely if you've only seen Argento films, or you've only seen Bava films or Fulci films, I think Martino is a good one to go to next, because I think he has a lot of stuff that's pretty cool. And he even has some of the crime, you know, kind of action films that are pretty neat. I think he worked in a lot of those different kind of genres as they went through Italian cinema, and he always had his stamp on them.
Yeah, so definitely recommend some Martino in your giallo experience.
That's right.
So I'm just always happy when I see one I haven't seen before. It's so exciting.
So many more to go. I've been doing a thing this year where I watch sequels to really to movies that are, well, the movies may be good, but the sequels tend to be not so good. So I've participated in this limitedly. But I've been watching, like, you know, I watched all the Leprechaun movies.
Okay.
I watched,
the last one was so
You didn't even
bad.
See the last one.
No, the last one I watched was just, In the Hood.
It's worse from there.
It made me so angry because, like, the first person they kill is like an Asian shopkeeper. Then there's like a trans sex worker that they kill. And I was just like, and like, it was just so much written by a bunch of white dudes, and I like could not handle it. I was so mad.
But it's In the Hood. The Hood was popular.
It does not hold up to the standards of 2021.
Well, if it makes you feel better, Back to the Hood is slightly better.
Yeah, I stopped after that. I can't take it anymore.
Back to the Hood is slightly better. The remake after that, or the reboot or whatever, maybe it wasn't even the reboot. I can't remember. The one, I didn't see the newest one, but the one that was like the last one in that series was quite bad. So anyway.
I made you watch all the Men in Black movies.
You did. They're fine. I also watched, the worst series I've ever watched in my life, maybe the worst horror series out there, though I haven't seen, you know, I haven't seen all the Children of the Corn movies yet, so we'll see. But the Howling series was impressively terrible by the end.
I did watch the one where they're just like singing in a bar for half the movie.
That was Howling 7. Yeah,
yeah,
that
I caught a lot of that one.
It's like, it's pretty shocking. That's a shocking movie. I think for years it wasn't available and people were confused that it even existed, but now it's on Tubi or something. I saw it, and if you think you have the constitution to watch terrible movies, Howling 7 is definitely up there. Now, on the other hand, Howling 3 has some of the most amazing, puzzling, weird stuff in really any movie ever. If you want to see a marsupial birth scene, then that is the movie for you. It might be the only movie. It certainly is the best marsupial birth scene in any movie I've seen.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that's kind of what we've been doing.
Yeah. So we've watched a ton more stuff than that, obviously, but it's a smattering of what's been recent. I mean, we watched The Amusement Park, which is on everybody's lips this week because it just got added to Shudder, and it's a George Romero. I think it's being marketed kind of weirdly in that it's like a lost film from him, and really it's like an industrial like PSA video he was like hired to do for the Lutherans. It's very strange. I would hardly call it a movie. It's like a little disturbing, you know. It's like you're gonna be old someday, like people are gonna treat you badly is kind of the thesis of the film. It's fascinating to watch, but I would not say it's like you love like Dawn of the Dead, so you're gonna go watch this movie. But it's definitely an interesting little nugget. And I think of it more in his public access work than I think of it in his horror film work.
Yeah. But anyway, if you have Shudder and you just throw it on 50 minutes to watch a very strange PSA that the Lutheran Church, you know, got Romero delivered it, and they're like, yeah, we're going to throw this in the garbage.
And they thought it was lost, and then like the George Somebody Romero found Foundation it. Restored yeah. it. So yeah. It's interesting. I do love seeing 16 mil footage from the 70s.
Yeah.
So I had a little fun with it.
It was apparently in quite bad shape, and they did a lot of work to make it watchable. But anyway, that's what we've been watching. And now that you've heard, we've broken the Bob Rose curse of the podcast. And we're going to try to be back regularly with more news about what we're up to, what we've been watching. Bring some guests on. And we're thinking about doing some live streaming as well. So I think we may
ask us questions as it's happening.
Yeah, we may record the podcast live. We're working on some new ideas. One of the reasons why we slowed down is I had to, the way we were structuring it, it took me a lot of work to do the audio edits and everything. So with this episode, if you hear a lot of bad sounds like microphone bumping and popping and Blanche licking things, that I'm going to leave them in. I'm not going to edit them out. So, you know, if you're like, why is the number of strange sounds increased? That's the reason. But anyway, thanks for tuning in. This has been the Launch Over Podcast on the Without Your Head Network. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.